Welcome to the Azure for Sports podcast, hosted by the Azure for Sports team at Microsoft.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Azure for Sports podcast. I'm Suzanne Tedrick, and as always, I'm joined by the amazing John Flynn.
Hey, Suzanne. I'm doing well. Again, it's summer, right? It's my season. This is my happy face now. It lasts for a couple of months a year, right? I'm just waiting for those 100-degree-plus northeast days, though.
You know, I appreciate summers a lot more having lived in Chicago for 10 years because there's only 2 months of actually great weather in the summer. And so now, so I mean, it can be an asphalt jungle here in New York, but it's like I take it with a little bit more pride.
I'm here for it all. Just bring it. But today is an amazing day. Summer or winter or spring or fall, this is an exciting day because we have one of the most innovative companies in sports today as guests, right?
We do. We are joined today by the founders of Beyond Sports, Sander J. Schouten and Nico Westerhoff, who are really excited to hear from all of the amazing things that they've been doing and really getting into the nitty gritty. Nico, Sander, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you for having us.
Good morning.
Good morning. So I'd like to start. I did a little bit of digging into your LinkedIn and your social media, and there was something that I saw that really resonated with me and leading into my next question, whereas the story of Beyond Sports is one of sports, passion, science, and technology. So I'm curious if you could walk us through a little bit on, you know, what is Beyond Sports? What are you doing? What is the genesis? And kind of giving a little bit of background to the passion, the science and technology of Beyond.
Well, Beyond Sports is a company that uses positional data out of live matches, any sport possible, preferably on a field or a rink or something that stays in the same place. And those positional data from those players, we take those in and we turn it around as fast as we can, mostly under a second, into a virtual recreation. And why do we do that? We do that because that allows us to place a camera wherever we want. And we do that because we can choose any virtual environment that we want, et cetera, et cetera. So there are a lot of advantages to using this system. And yeah, Nico, you can take. Say way more.
Yeah, we'll get more into it later in the podcast. But like Sander's saying, it's trying to get to something that traditional cameras cannot achieve. We are setting out to achieve that by using virtual worlds, virtual simulations of matches instead of the actual thing.
And by doing so, and that's maybe where the passion part I've seen is that we also found new ways to engage with younger audiences, younger demographics, something that the sports world in general is struggling with. And that's why we're so passionate. Like we can give that same love that we had the first time you saw a big soccer match in our case, most likely, and get addicted to the game. And you want to have that for my kids and other kids as well. Like you want to have that spark that actually ignites them and brings them into the sports forever.
That's awesome. And I will admit, both of my daughters wanted to stay home from school today just to watch this because you are their superheroes. Right. So that tie-in that you did with Big City Greens, which happens to be one of their favorite shows on TV, and the NHL, my girls are not hockey fans. Right? They just, it's not interesting. It doesn't appeal to them. They don't get it. They don't understand it. All of a sudden, we're Big City Greens and an NHL tie-in, and we're looking at the zoo animals, and we're looking at cricket, and we're looking at all the, it just became the most amazing thing. Now they want to watch hockey, right? So to your point, that spark, you guys did that, right? With the collaborations that you've done, which is absolutely incredible. But I want to talk a little bit before, and we're going to dive into that. But I just want to talk a little bit before that. Now, Nico, you come from sports, right? IX Amsterdam. You have this sports background. You have this passion. You leaned into sports. That's my role. That's what I'm going to be doing. And then, Sander, you came from oil and gas, right? So something outside of sports. How did you guys come together to create this amazing thing that is just creating sparks all the way over in New York with two girls going, wow, this is amazing. Let me now follow hockey.
Well, to start off, everybody has his flaws, right? So I quickly discovered that hydrocarbon was not the way to go forward for this planet. So I pivoted pretty quickly into geothermal energy. But by doing so and working for a startup, I realized that it's such a great atmosphere to be in and that everybody's fighting for the same cause and has the same passion to do something else and disrupt stuff. And actually, I took that with me into my next job, which was in IT. And then, well, basically, this idea of what now is known as Beyond Sports started when I was working for that company and was introduced to a head coach of the Dutch national team, and where we first had the idea to use positional data to create a virtual environment. A bit later, I run into Nico, who heard an interview on the radio of us talking about that. He had a similar idea about working for Ajax. I had developers and he had players. And that's where we found common ground, I would say.
Continuing on that vein, Nico, I'll pose this question to you. What has been the technical journey for Beyond? How have we gotten to this point? What are the technologies that are employed? What are perhaps some roadblocks that you've encountered in the development that you've worked through over time?
So when I was working at Ajax, I was working mainly with the data. So with this positional tracking data that we now use as a basis for our simulations. And by doing so, I gained a lot of experience with these data, which were back then really not that great quality-wise. You know, it was just single-point tracking. There was a lot of flaws. It was not even 3D. It was just 2D tracking, and there were a lot of errors in the data. And so when we set out to visualize this, you know, when you have just the data and it's just a million lines of Excel, it's not really noticeable if there's a flaw. If the player suddenly on the other side of the field and back again within a second, you know, if you visualize it, it becomes really apparent and it really distorts your view of the game. But if you see that in just an Excel file, you're like, oh yeah, it's probably right. So when we started to visualize this, that's when the flaws really became apparent and visible. And that's to your question on what the technology is that drives this. It's mostly about that data processing. So we set out to take that data, understand where the flaws are in a live environment, and then not only understand where the flaws are, but also fix those flaws on the fly. So that under a second that Sander was talking about, that's about knowing where the errors are in the data, fixing those errors so that we can then get it to the visualization engine where it gets visualized. And still that data processing, even more so now that we're moving to full skeletal tracking where there's many, many more points, so many more points of potential failure as well on these tracking systems. Now we're getting more and more into those more data points. It's even more important that we...
I think we really need to deep dive into that because I think that's where our real strength lies. Like the reason why we can fix those errors, it sounds like a zero or one, right? It's good or not good, but we're talking about like 2 frames and 60 frames per second, right? So it is marginal, but still, if you're visualizing that and bring that to an audience, it's noticeable and you don't want that. And since we don't have our own tracking system when we started with Beyond Sports, we had to be agnostic to any other tracking system that was out there. And by looking at all the different systems, we started to notice the discrepancies between the systems. And we started to fix those flaws because a lot of the times our clients were looking at us for a flaw where actually the cause was not with us. So, and you cannot say to your client, yeah, but it's not us. It's the fuel that my engine is driving on, right? So Nick and I looked at each other, like, we need to overcome this problem. And therefore we need to install something in the middle that actually normalizes all the flaws out of the data. And then from that point forward, that's the new standard that we want to work with. And up until today, that's still a really, really valid part of our whole business. And once you have this normalized data, then you can do anything with it that you actually want to do with it, with a big city green, and just one of the examples that we can do with that data stream.
That's awesome. I mean, you guys kind of, you put a spell checker in the middle of the data that you're getting and then the visualization tool that you have, because you're right. In an Excel spreadsheet, you look at something, you can identify outliers, anomalies, etc., and it's a cell. Right. But if you're watching something on screen and you replay the data that you have and you've got a position in goal, and then all of a sudden he's back in the other person's goal and then back in his goal in a 3 second time period, maybe something fishy going on there. Right. And it is jarring to the audience. It is something like, well, this maybe isn't the quality that I want. And to your point, Sandy, you can't say, well, it's not me. Right. Because ultimately you're the guys who are putting it on. So one of the things that is, and I think this is a stroke of genius, right? One of the things that is super interesting to me is that you have this extremely high quality data now that you've cleansed, you've normalized, and you can put in any sort of visualization tool or create any visualization tool. Why did you decide to go down the scale in terms of the age of the audience you're approaching, right? We've seen it with the NHL, with the Nickelodeon. We've seen it with Big City Greens, and we've seen it with now recreating stuff with Roblox, etc. How did you identify that versus going for extremely high quality video game sort of quality replays on matches? Can you talk us a little bit through that journey?
Yeah, that didn't happen from one day to the next, right? So it's obviously there is a time frame in that. But what we just realized is that we didn't want to be an add-on to something that was already existing. We really saw there was like a gap of non-viewers that were highly motivated to play 4 hours of Roblox maybe back then in Fortnite or in Minecraft, but like in a different environment. And then we realized, so it's not that they don't want to watch for this amount of time, like that they don't want to, it's not that they want to carve out 3 hours of their day. It's just not that what's presented by them in these sports in a traditional way, it actually appeals to them. So we need to change that in order to get them in. And once we have them in, then the possibilities are endless, basically, right? And it's not that we're not doing the high fidelity stuff, like that's also there. We were doing that, I think, together with our friends at Hawkeye, the FIFA Semifinal site. Is a great example of that, and there are going to be other things like that. But utilizing that same data set, and instead of having one outlet, why should you not have multiple outlets coming out of the pipeline? Because the pipeline doesn't differ from the endpoint.
Right. And for these rights holders, it's a big issue as well, right? The younger generation not being attached to the sport and not viewing sports anymore on the traditional platforms. They're just losing out on the bottom of the pyramid, basically. The fan base is getting older. And those older fan base, they're still going to watch traditional sports media, right? So to your point, that's not really who we want to serve us, or that's not really what's necessary to serve us, because they already have a platform that they're watching. It's a traditional sports broadcasting on television. So it makes a lot of sense to Sanders' point, create something completely new that tailors to that next generation. Instead of trying to get them in to broadcasting, why not make something completely new that will attract these young generation to
And there's a really, really important point that study says you need to have them between 14 and 18. Otherwise, they're lost for your sport. And that's why we're so focusing on that, because if you engage with them, and that was one of the biggest things that for me that came out of Big City Greens, is that we actually saw a big drop in median age from 28 to 14, right in the sweet spot where we wanted to have them, because that's where you can actually engage with them. And now your daughters, as you referred to earlier on, they can become hockey fans. Doesn't say that they're going to be hockey fans, but the potential is there. Like the seed has been planted. And that for us is really, really important. So we need to get them in early, so that we have a consistent and healthy value chain of life cycle later on. And I think if you talk about challenges that had to be overcome, that was one of our biggest challenges, not having proof of stake yet, but saying to these rights holders, you need to invest in them. There is not directly money coming back from them. Like we think we find out a way to how to get money back from them. But if you don't have them now, you won't have rights, broadcast rights, I mean, to sell off later, because there is nobody to sell it to. And that sort of didn't go from one day to the next. That's
The future proofing is never the easiest conversation to have, right?
Yeah. It's easier to write the wave than create it, isn't it? So
oh, absolutely. Oh, very good saying. So, but one of the things that, again, sticking with the challenges a little bit, that having a Big City Greens approach to hockey, right? There's definitely an appeal there for the younger market. That's great. They can go and watch it. But you guys took it one step further. You did it real time, right? You took a game, you took an NHL game, and you presented it. It was on linear, right? In its usual form against the Rangers and the Capitals, right? But then you'd put it on OTT platforms. It was on Disney Plus. It was on ESPN Plus, right? But you did it real time. So the shots are, and I was completely fact checking you. I'm going to be completely honest, right? I was watching the linear stream and I was watching the OTT stream, and it was absolutely amazing, right? With all of the background going on, with the animals escaping the zoo, which is a thing that happens in every single show, for those who don't know Big City Greens. So having the presenters actually be motion captured as well, so they were part of the animated experience. It wasn't just look, these are sort of stick figures running around an ice rink. It was the real characters. There were the the players, the non-playable characters that were in the actual rink itself were in the uniforms of the teams, and then you got the special Big City Green Skies. How did you then decide, I got a great idea, let's do it real time?
Yeah. I think it was never on our mind to not do it real time, to be honest.
Awesome.
We like sport is real time, even though we got great statistics on highlights and maybe for a second or a different topic. But I think we never considered not to be to have it live. We always talk to the NHL, and we have been working with the NHL for a long time to get this normalized data stream, as we mentioned earlier, to do stuff with. And they were really opening to do stuff with that data. And then through our friends at ESPN Holland, we were introduced to ESPN in the US, and we said, like, we can't do this live. And that clicked for them as well. And then we sketched this future that we could have like a full end-to-end virtual production, which for us was also a step further than the stuff that we did with Nickelodeon. And because we really thought that kids that were watching, and maybe you can back us up here or completely destroy the story, but I don't think that your daughters were actually caring about the live match at all. They were so focused of the game happening in their hero environment, in their habitat, the habitat that they want to be in, that even if there was discrepancy or there was a second delay, they probably didn't care too much that this real thing that you were looking at was also happening. Correct?
That's right. They didn't. But what they did care about, though, is that I was passionately interested in the real thing that was happening, and they could watch it and get on the same page as me and be a cool fan like Dad, but in their world, right? So and we had two worlds that were living next to each other.
And that's exactly why I wanted to have it live, because we want to see that interaction back into the living room, as I watched many games with my dad and could share passion for the Dutch national team getting around further in a World Cup or those kind of things. Like those are things that you remember long past that.
Totally, life. Absolutely.
Yeah, the biggest compliment that we got on social media, and there's a lot of pictures of side-by-side parents watching the actual, like you say, and the children watching the virtual. One of the biggest compliments was parents saying, like, my kids, like, I've been trying to watch hockey with them for so long, and they were never interested. I could never get them to watch more than a minute of hockey with me. And now suddenly they were together, like father and son or mother and daughter, like actually watching a full game together and both really enjoying it and enjoying that togetherness as well. And that was such a big compliment to
100%.
Well, and I think, and I'm hoping I'm not spilling the tea here, but one of the greatest ice hockey players I ever played actually commenting back saying, this is the best thing I ever saw. Like, I really liked
that. Was
it.
Pretty cool.
And I'm sure from a technology standpoint, that was not a small feat. I mean, just trying to do that in general is hard. Doing it real time is even harder. Could you speak to, I guess, the technical underpinnings of how that was possible? John and I are biased towards cloud computing, so would love to hear if cloud computing is at all part of that. We're totally transparent about where we're coming from, but we just kind of love to hear how do we technically make this happen.
Nice. Let me start by saying that all the data processing does run in the cloud as well, so I hope that helps. But no, so to the data processing story, there's actually another step that went into it in order to get to a Big City Greens broadcast like this, because the NHL single point tracking, meaning that like the players are wearing a tag and we only get center of mass for every single player and the puck. So that means that we don't know how the characters are actually moving. We don't know what the players are actually doing. We only know where they are. With Hawkeye, with limb tracking, we know exactly where the hands are, where the feet are. But with this data, it's just single point. So we only know where they are. So there's another step to our data processing. It's not just finding where potential flaws in the errors are, fixing those errors. There's actually going from one single point to a full 29-point skeletal model. So that's a whole nother level that lives on top of our data processing that's mostly machine learning based, that takes that single point and turns it into a full animated character throughout the entire match. So a simple example would be skating. If we know that a player is skating and he's not near a puck, we just apply like a skating movement, but it becomes more interesting when a player is interacting with other players or a player is interacting with the puck. There needs to be a lot more like dribbling, like passing, goalkeeper saves, all that stuff. That's all machine learning based animations that's applied on top of the single point positional data.
And so basically we're looking back in data to apply back on live what's happening. Yeah, now everything is like all the contextual information that we can get, we use to sort of predict what should happen in the movement. That was what it made it difficult in this one. And a few months later, on the NHL Tech Showcase in Seattle, together with Hawkeye, we had the limb tracking data, and that rolled into another other level again, because the same logic applies. Even though you get now a full skeleton in, you still want to, based on all the information that you're getting, make as smooth operation as you can get, obviously.
There's some minor sidestep, but there's an interesting point to limb tracking as well, because if you apply limb tracking to a realistic skeleton, like realistic character, it works one-on-one. But if we want to have limb tracking applied to Cricket, for example, of the Big City Green Show, his proportions are not necessarily realistically human proportions. So then you need another step in the data processing, which is what we call stylizing of the movement. So we take that like positional tracking data from all the points, or the limb tracking data of all the body parts of the player, and we sort of stylize that movement to still be the same movement. So a slap shot would still be a slap shot, but then it would be stylized to make sense for Cricket specific movement patterns.
Mind you, he skated on bare feet, right? So some would be applied there.
But that, I think that's super cool, right? Because one of the things that was always amazing to me in sticking with Big City Greens for a minute, though, is that you had the ability, and this is where I think the partnership with the creators come in, right? Is that you had an ancillary world around the game, right? Yeah. And that happens in the show itself. So Big City Greens is set in this fictitious world. Obviously, it's a cartoon, right? And there's always something happening around the periphery that, in like most animated and cartoons, there's always something in the background. And if you look at the nuances, you can find it. It's not just what action is. You guys also did that. So how much did that process of going from an idea to actually getting on the live stream, how did that process look with how many people were involved? How long did it take? Was it a complete and utter nightmare, or was it something that was just really process oriented and easy to go, and you can recreate that down the line for other games?
No, I think it was not a nightmare to start off with. I think that where a lot of people talk, somebody needs to listen as well in the room. And when you got in a room with ESPN senior executives who has been on many, many live shows, and they start telling you more about how a narrative really works, because we were really focused on getting this out live in a different environment, like in a recreation of the real thing. And then I think we have to give credit to Ed Placey here as well from ESPN, and said, like, no, we need to, there's a story to be told here. Like it's not just about the game. And I think that's was our biggest learning as well, but also the big part of the success that these little things did happen. First of all, we said, like, how did we end up there? Like, why are we in Big City Greens? And then we looked at each other, because we're going to do a live. No, that's not the story. The story is like, okay. And then also thanks to the NHL, a big shout out to Pete Horseman and Dave Lahansky, who actually got the commissioner to participate in a little leading up advertisement saying,
yes,
Cricket basically randomly calling every Mr. Batman that he could find in New York City up until he reached the commissioner, Gary Batman. And he started his conversation basically asking, because he broke the TV at home, if they could come to his town to play an NHL match so he could sort of make it up for his family not being able to watch the NHL games anymore. And now it made sense that we were there, right? And there was another element that we actually did, is a 2D show, and we made it into a 3D environment. So that was another element that we could add. But I love one of the intermediate shots, because everybody looked at the chicken ref and the zoo animals that broke loose. But there's actually one of the breaks, we go back into the family's living room, and there's this television standing there, and there's a little card saying, cheers, Gary Batman, or something those lines. And that reflected back on that promo shot. And like all these things work, because now it's also funny for parents to watch it, you know, like
exactly.
And once again, a shout out to the guys at ESPN, because they really helped us, or we helped each other basically by listening in to those who have the expertise in their areas to make this great show.
That's awesome, right? Because the kids love the story, right? I mean, it was so funny. So everything that you meant landed really well. I saw it firsthand, which was super great, right? The TV's broken because there's a hockey stick in it. And then they're on the phone to the commissioner. And it's funny, my daughters turn around and go, do you speak to this guy? I'm like, soon, right? But it played very, very well. So again, congratulations to that. So Where do you think this goes? What has this enabled you guys, not only as Beyond Sports, but what from the technology that you've been able to refine and learnings that you took from the Big City Greens? Where does this take you next?
So I really think that even though like first 12 hours, 1.27 billion social impressions, news outlets, et cetera, et cetera, like mind-blowing numbers. Three times as much viewings on the virtual stream and on the regular stream. Like I said, median age drop 28 to 14. We had a predominant female audience of 58% female. It was for a sports event. Loved all those kind of things. But still, I think that this mark in time, it's really going to change stuff. Because right now, there is proof of stake. And I mentioned that earlier on, that's so important. So and the NHL and put their neck out, but it worked. And now more and more sports organizations, rights holders, actually recognizing this whole thing and this movement. And it just helps. It helps to have this done. So just from a historical point of view, I think this was a really important one. If you ask me where does it go next, I think into many other live streams with regular IP, sponsored IP, because don't forget, Big City Greens is one big advertisement. Yeah, because the show just spikes after that. But where we really think that there's another area where we can grow in or do more with is the user-generated content part of it. And that's what we're seeing right now after doing FIFA World together with FIFA and Hawkeye Data and again Sweden building that environment is where kids loved it during the World Cup because they could relive the game, the goals of their favorite games, of their favorite heroes. But even now, 6 months post World Cup, kids still go back in there, screen grab what they saw, and then post them on their own socials. And they easily make like a million views on those posts, which is crazy, right? So everybody in the sports world always is about life, 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 life. But actually, these kids are still enjoying it if they can make their own angle from their own perspective, from their own narrative, basically, their own ad placey, their inner ad placey, I would say, create that. Post on social and it goes again. Like it lives on, and there is something that's really crucial there. So one of the things that we have launched here in the Netherlands with the Dutch Eredivisie, which is our soccer league, is an app called Game Phase, where kids are actually allowed to choose their own point of view, create their own angles, but also how does my character look like? Does it look like a blocky or does it look like a superhero? Or is it played on the moon or in a swimming pool? All those kind of things, which makes it unique for them, and then start sharing to their peers, and then it picks up, then there is something magic happening there. Then you start to create like a value chain that could be monetized by a rights holder. And why should you not then reward it back to those kids who actually was used as a lead gen or lead generation for your sport by saying, hey, if you hit so many views on your clip, that should automatically turn into an NFT and then we can reward it back to you. Like all those kind of things are going to happen right now. And that's what we're really focused on.
And if you look at, you know, the Big City Greens, it was pretty revolutionary, but it was also still a linear, passive experience, right? It was basically traditional broadcasting, but a new layer on top of it. But it was still linear, it was still passive. And all the things that Sander is saying, I think that's us moving in a direction where we're not having one director who directs the game to see for the entire world, like everyone who watched the World Cup final, everyone around the world are seeing the same thing, right? But maybe I'm more interested in like tactics, and Sander is more interested in like nice slow-mo action shots than if we than if we watch the same game at the same time. If it's not linear anymore, if it's personalized, if it's interactive, we can actually make it so that if a goal is scored, I can watch on my phone an instant replay of the top view, how the attacks build up. Sander can watch on his phone an instant replay of the goalkeeper like nearly missing the ball in slow motion, right? And this is something that cannot be done with regular broadcasting, but can be done with all the platforms that Sander just described.
You know, the thing that I love from this conversation is it's not so much just a general conversation about viewer engagement, but really talking about engagement plus accessibility, reaching a number of different audiences and meeting them where they are to make it a more inclusive and fun experience for everyone to enjoy sports together versus just the traditional, I guess, groups that have tended to watch said sports. So thinking about the successes that you've had, what advice would you give for any other companies or individuals who are perhaps looking to leverage technology to be able to create more engaging generative content?
I would say foremost, it should be your passion. You should really feel it that you want to do that, because there were many times that nobody believes in us, and that people were saying that we were not right, or that we should go into hyper-realistic mode, trying to compete with the EAs of this world. And we had a plan and we stuck to it, but we pivoted so many, like not as in away from that big dot on the horizon, but more as in how to get there. So we were flexible. I think we were stubborn, but never too stubborn to listen. But I would say there are so many opportunities out there right now that you could use to add to the sport, if we stick to sport, but in general. But if it doesn't make you want to come out of bed 2 hours early than you would regularly do, then that there is something not correct.
And for us, it's always about the story, right? It's always about telling a story. We're trying to engage people by telling these stories. It's not just about bringing sports technology to the market. There's so many sports technology companies out there. For us, it's really about the story around it, and the technology is just something that makes it possible for us to tell that story.
Yeah. That's awesome, and I love that. And one thing that just screams through is passion here from you guys, right? And that is, it's amazing. I've had the privilege of having conversations with both of you over the last year or so as well, and that passion's always increased every single time we've had a chat. So I think that's amazing. We're unfortunately out of time here, but one of the things I would love to do is invite you guys back again, because I want to noodle a little bit on this generative content stuff, right? Because that's obviously taken the world by storm. The Azure OpenAI and OpenAI itself have just become the widest and the quickest adopted sort of technology out there, and no more in sports, right? We're seeing a lot of this generative content. So that hopefully is a good enough teaser for the next time we get you guys on the show. That'll be amazing. But I'm so thankful that you took the time to come have a chat with us. I am extremely thankful that you've helped get my daughters into hockey, because it makes my life a lot easier as well when they have to explain why I'm always watching TV. So thank you. But guys, this has been absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a great conversation. Love it. And hopefully all of you have enjoyed the episode as well. Until next time, please take care and we'll see you soon.